Well, hello, everybody, and welcome to the Words, Women, and Wisdom radio show, streaming live on BBS Radio from California and syndicating to over 100 stations globally and numerous podcast platforms, including iHeart and also including the new Podopolo platform. I'm your show host, Yvonne E.L. Silva. My mission is uplifting the spirit of humanity. And I do that by showcasing amazing women. Typically, they've risen from a tragedy to triumph, from a point of chaos to confidence, risen to success, and are now making a huge contribution to their community and very often globally as well. Now, as a female founder and entrepreneur and certified executive coach and chartered HR professional, I've helped thousands of people find excellent career choices in the past 10 years, and in particular, supported women to excel in their leadership and especially in involving their confidence. So today I work as a coach and mentor to mission-inspired entrepreneurs and conscious leaders who are ready to flourish in business, yet those who struggle with self-doubt and being heard in a man's world. Now that's not Amber. We'll get to Amber in just a moment. I help them master their confidence and find their authentic voice, so they can negotiate what they want, make more sales, and grow their team. Because when we have a sustainable business that's fun and successful, everybody flourishes. And with enhanced communication skills, then they can lead to expand and engage their team, grow their business with ideal clients, have more sales. And I believe that we can have balance as female entrepreneurs and then be great role models for our children. So today I'm talking with a parenting expert, an expert, an author, and a host of the Stretch Marks podcast, Amber Trueblood. And we're going to be talking about, lots of things, including stretching for success. So hello, Amber.
Hello, Yvonne. Thank you so much for having me today.
You are very welcome. I was so intrigued when we first connected, actually through the Podopolo platform, where your podcast is hosted, and my Women of Wisdom show as well is also being hosted there now too. And I was so intrigued. I mean, you're an author, a retreat host, a podcaster, mother of four sons. That in itself, I mean, I have one son, and even though he has special needs, he's still a handful. I just can't imagine having four rambunctious boys. And I've seen the pictures on your website, so they look pretty lively.
Yes, there's a lot of action going on nonstop. In fact, I told them all, I said, okay, I know you're tempted, but let's everybody in the backyard while I'm doing this interview, please.
Well, the thing is, you know, this is live radio, so you get what you get, right? And
yes,
we are certainly, you know, most of us are still working from home. And if you have kids under 12, guess where they are as well? They're going to be right beside you. So, yeah. So by way of officially introducing Amber, she's got an incredible bio. She's a licensed family therapist, an MBA, as well as being author, retreat host, podcaster. And she's really obsessed. I love that word, obsessed, with providing mothers with simple and realistic tools to guide them towards a happier, calmer mum life. And her approach includes helping clients clarify their unique combination of values and lifestyle priorities and family dynamics, reinforced with a solid commitment to self-kindness and self-honesty. So as a lady who emboldens mums to choose and implement tools and tactics most likely to work for their individual personality and their priorities, that's important work. And with confidence, clarity, and a clear sense of purpose, her clients and students can minimize their relationship and parenting challenges and improve their mental health and emotional sanity. Yay!
Yay! Wouldn't that be lovely?
For those of you listening live on BBS Radio, if you want to dial in, if you have questions as you're listening to Amber speaking, here's the number to dial into. I'll give it one more time a bit later as well. But if you have a pen, the live call-in number is 1-888-627-6 0008. So you've been featured, Amber, quite a bit, different magazines, LA Parent, Parade, Oprah Magazine. So you write a lot and you do a lot. So I'm really curious to hear your story. You shared a little bit about it when we first got connected. So how did you get doing this kind of work? And what's the story of Tragedy to Triumph?
Well, I knew, you know, so I was married prior to this relationship. My marriage now, we've been together for 19 years. But before that, I got married and, you know, found myself, you know, having made a really wrong choice for me and, you know, coming out of that relationship, going through a divorce that ended up in a bankruptcy, dealing with that. And I was just looking through your questions prior to this, and I remember my ex had me deposed, and that was probably one of the lowest points in my life. I remember just being so infuriated and embarrassed and upset, and it was just this horrific day of this three-hour crazy deposition. And not that we had any resources or property or children or anything to even argue about. It was, you know, it was kind of just a nightmare, you know, emotional torture experiment. You know what I'm saying? And I remember leaving the deposition, and I had this lawyer who had just failed me miserably during those 3 hours, and he felt really bad, and he said, you know, said, well, let me take you for something to eat. And so we ate. I said, okay. You know, he felt guilty because he did such a terrible job in there. And I felt better when we got done eating, and we went out to the parking lot, and he tried to kiss me. And first of all, he was about 50 years older than me. He was maybe in his early 80s, and I was in my mid-20s. And not that that makes it any less, you know, inappropriate, you know what I'm saying? But it was so shocking to me and disturbing and just the ultimate, like, exclamation point on the crappiest day ever. Oh. And I just thought, what the heck just happened? What just happened? And so for me, that was, you know, one of those moments you look back and think, how did this even come to pass? You know, how am I here in this situation? And how will I get out of it? What will my life look like? Because everything, and I think, you know, right now, so many of us are in that position where we think, what's happening with our careers? What's happening with our family? What's happening with our health? What's happening with the economy? You know, that's on everybody's mind. So it was one of those kind of moments just personally where I thought, holy moly, what just happened and where will I go next? And so I was working full-time and going to school part-time at night at the time. And I was doing an MBA, which I really wasn't passionate about. I loved business, but I, you know, there were only certain aspects of it that I loved, but I spent a lot of time doing that. And then when I finished that, I realized, you know, what I really love is understanding human behavior and why we do what we do and why we make the choices that we make. And really what I wanted to do was get an advanced degree in psychology and clinical psych. So then I went back to school again, part-time again, while I was working full-time and did that. And that's when I started dating my current husband. Excuse me. Yeah, and so then I really was passionate about understanding human behavior and how we think and how our minds develop. And so I got my license in marriage and family therapy, which is a master's level counseling in California, and loved it. But for whatever reason, the one-on-one therapy, like, it didn't satisfy what I was looking for. Like, it just didn't click. And I thought, gosh, you know, I really want to help people. I'm fascinated about this subject, but I just felt like I'm not helping enough people quickly enough. It just felt empty, you know? And so we started building a family, and I ended up with, you know, three kids and then four kids. And we, you know, we loved our family, and both my husband and I are only children with raised with single moms. And so we really loved the idea of having, you know, a large, very close-knit family. And so I ended up stopping work and staying home with the boys. And so everything kind of went on hold, and my learning switched to more, you know, books, basically. I'm obsessed with books. So I just read everything I could get my hands on, whether it was about child development or parenting or, you know, systems and management and business and, you know, anything I could find, self-help, meditation, spirituality. I just dug in and kept learning during that time. And I knew at some point all of it would come back together, but I couldn't see how for a really long time, and it was quite frustrating. But I really wanted to figure out how am I going to match this, like, kind of intense, and that's why I use the word obsession to feel like I'm helping people, along with my fascination with understanding human behavior. And then now I had, on top of it, this experience raising four children. Right. And, you know, and all that I had learned as a result of that, they're really close together. My fourth was born when my oldest was 5 years and 2 months old. So I had a five-year-old and then three more below him.
Wow.
And now,
how old are they now?
Now they are 7, 9, 11, and 12.
Okay. So they're still really close.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yes, they haven't dispersed at all. And at the time it didn't seem crazy. Now I'll see women with, you know, just boom, 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 you know, one kid after another. And I think, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, that's so intense. And then I think, wow, okay, you did that. But it didn't appear that way to me at the time. It felt, you know, each one I chose and like, you know, made the conscious decision. to bring somebody else in the family, and it was wonderful. But now looking back, I think, well, how did that work? How did I function? But a lot of the content that I provide today is basically all of the stuff, all of the stuff I wish I had known 10 years ago. I mean, really, right. Really, it's all of the tools and the practices and the secrets and the tips that helped me get through it, and stuff I learned later that I wish I had known at the time.
Yeah.
So So
what would be some of the maybe, you know, top four or five things that throughout this experience, if you didn't have four rambunctious boys and going through that early experience, you know, getting into second marriage, etc., what are some of the top sort of four things? Five things that you think really you understand deeply and you can share so impactfully with your audiences that our audience here would be intrigued to learn too.
Yes, I would love to. Well, during this time I've been doing lots of different interviews, whether it's about, you know, relationships or homeschooling or dealing with quarantining, you know, together with family members or communication. And I always start with the first two things, and this is because of what you just said, what I've learned and what I found most helpful, is starting from a place, number one, of being kind to yourself is so key. And what I mean by that is, if we're in our heads, which we often are, nobody's perfect at this, you know, judging, questioning, being embarrassed, wondering what other people are thinking, being, you know, just flat out being mean to ourselves, you know, calling ourselves names. Oh my gosh, you're always getting this wrong. Or, oh, I'm so dumb. Or, oh, I'm always late. Or, you know, just the way we speak to ourselves and think about ourselves. It's very hard to improve or grow in any way if you're being really, really unkind to yourself.
Right.
So to me, starting from a space of, kind of like they say, a lot of practices, if you start from a place of gratitude, that really allows you to do so much more. This is, you know, a similar concept, but starting with really starting to notice, how am I speaking to myself? Am I being kind to myself consistently? And if not, the first step is just noticing that and catching yourself. Right. And realizing if you're a parent with small, well, any age children in your home, you know, they're noticing, you're modeling that, you're modeling it, and they're absorbing it. You know, they're taking on and noticing how you're treating yourself, how you're speaking to yourself. And are you treating yourself with kindness and love or with harsh judgment? You know?
Mm-hmm.
So to me, that's number one, is being kind to yourself. And it's a daily thing that we all have to work on. It's not like, oh, check. Yes, I'm kind to myself. You know, I give myself a pat on the back every day. It's a process. And sometimes, some days we have more success with it than others, right? Some days we're like, I'm feeling good. Like, I felt really confident and I felt happy and I was kind to myself all day. And when somebody complimented me, I was able to accept it, you know, happily and graciously and move on. And, you know, in other days, it's a lot harder. And sometimes we spiral. And so I'm all about, you know, coming up with tools and little practices that you can add to your day that can help you, you know, be kinder to yourself. So that's my number one. The second one is being honest with yourself. And what I mean by this is, you have to start with kindness, right? Because being honest with yourself about mean things is not what I mean. But being honest with yourself, meaning, so when I'll say, or anybody, you know, hey, here are all these tools. Oh, I get up at 5 a.m. and I walk down to the beach and I meditate for 2 hours. You know, look at those things that are being provided to you as options and be honest with yourself about what will work for you. So you know yourself best, everybody out there, right? Nobody else is in your head and in your life, and you have your own priorities and your own values and your own lifestyle and your own family dynamics. And then you're different from how you were 2 years ago. And then you might be different in 2 years from now. So nobody can choose for you the tools and the advice and the support that will work best for you. So your job is to be really honest with yourself about what will work for you. And then not only are you more likely to succeed, but you're more likely to be confident because you think, how many times do you read something and you think, oh my gosh, they did this, they changed their diet in this way, and wow, they look amazing, they say they feel great, they're energized, and you want to copy that, even if you know in your head that you've tried that before and it hasn't worked for you, you know, but you want to copy it, and then you kind of set yourself up to maybe not be successful because you're copying what worked for somebody else, and then you feel even worse about yourself when it doesn't succeed. And so yeah. I like to kind of start a step back and say, be really honest with yourself. And if you're not sure and you say, you know what, I've never tried this before. Like, I want to go off coffee. I was talking with some girlfriends last night and, you know, so I'm going to try green tea. And, you know, so it's not to say you only do things that have worked for you in the past. Definitely be open to new things. But as much as you know yourself and really can ask yourself, what will work for me? Well, you know, I know that I'm most energetic in the morning. So if I like put my walking shoes out and I have really good music already set to play on my phone and I tell everybody in my family, hey, at 8 o'clock, I'm going to go for a 30-minute walk and you set it up the night before, you know, maybe that for you, you're way more likely to follow through. So set yourself up.
It's interesting to hear some of those strategies. I mean, certainly as a certified coach, one of the things I love about coaching is that I don't have to know all the answers. In fact, it's better that I don't, because when I when I come to the conversation and I'm asking my client, you know, what are some options that you might consider? They're the ones who know, you know, how much risk is involved, how confident they are, what the personality is of the person they're going to be, you know, working with in this, you know, whatever this question or challenge is. And so, you know, I can spout out a few different options, but they're the ones who know which ones are most likely to be successful. And then also, because they came up with the idea, they're way more committed to following through on it anyway. So that question very often I'll ask my clients as well that relates to what you're saying is, what is that your definition of success? Because it's different for every woman.
So true. Yes, I love that, Yvonne. Yeah, that's so true. And I think we, you know, and sometimes it's teaching people too how to notice, because we've become, a lot of us, very disconnected from listening to our own, you know, inner gut, intuition, all of that. A lot of us, I was for many years, so like really, really disconnected. It was all my decisions were up in my head with, you know, spreadsheets and, you know, pros and cons lists. I wasn't in tune with my gut. It took me several years kind of to rekindle that. But, you know, I'll tell people, you know, notice what, you know, when you start to grin a little bit, or, you know, you nod your head up and down, or, you know, you stop and you remember, oh, wow, I used to do that when I was really stressed out in college, and it totally helped me then. Why don't I do that anymore? You know, when you know, giving people the tools to identify when they're agreeing with something or when it's resonating is also important, because for a lot of us, and I just speak from personal experience, like, sometimes we've forgotten how to tune in and answer those questions honestly. What will work for you? Oh, God, I don't know. I haven't asked myself that in years.
Well, I think the timing is critical. You need to be asking yourself, you know, when you're in an upbeat mood, when something amazing has happened, that's the time to put together your not-so-excited list. So
yes.
If you're already down in the depths of, you know, not necessarily full-on technical depression, but, I mean, if you're feeling crappy that day, that's not
right.
The time to have the energy to create, to come up with something really creative to get yourself out of it. So have your, you know, have your happy things list ready in
yes.
your drawer or stuck on your bulletin board, so that you've got those go-to things identified when you were in an exhilarated state. And it will carry the, you know, that enthusiasm will carry you forward, because you know, oh, I remember when I wrote that list, I was so excited and happy because XYZ just happened. And here's what I wrote down. My number one thing is, you know, whether it's phone a friend or, you know, run a bubble bath or whatever it is. But ideally, some sort of daily, what I call a success ritual, will set you up
mm-hmm.
for success the first few minutes of the day. I always wake up at least an hour before the rest of my family does, so that
mm-hmm.
I get my me time.
Yes, oh, that's so important. And once you create that ritual that works for you, it's really easy to maintain it, because it's working so well for you that you begin, and correct me if I'm wrong, if this is not your experience, but like, then you really hold tightly to it because you realize what a benefit it's become, and that you really don't want to start the day without having that hour. It's not like
exactly.
You're really, oh, you're rushing, you know, you're trying to fit it in. No, no, no. Once you create like a morning pattern and ritual that works for you, then it becomes very self-reinforcing.
Yeah. I mean, otherwise, I find the day just gets away from me if I don't do that. And so I don't like that feeling that I'm, you know, running behind already. So, nope, set myself up for success in the morning, pick a few things that are absolute non-negotiables I'm going to work on,
yeah.
Or things I'm going to, you know, complete or participate in or whatever. But having that quiet time to just, you know, start the day without this frenzied activity really makes a difference. And I can't imagine,
oh.
as I said, doing it with four kids, so...
And then I do, well, I don't do an hour, but I do, and now granted, I don't have toddlers or infants at home, which would make it, you know, a lot more difficult. But, but yeah, every morning I do a morning meditation, and probably for the past 4 or 5 years now, and then one at night, and, you know, and sometimes in the middle of the day, if it's necessary.
Yeah.
But it saves me on so many levels, and then sometimes it's not enough. So this morning I woke up and was just feeling the weight of the planet. I could feel, you know, that it wasn't just me; it was just poof, everything. And you know, and I told my husband, I said, I think I need to get in the car and drive down to the beach and do my meditation down there. And
mm-hmm.
one of my kids is an earlier riser than the rest, and so he came with me, and you know, and he just brought some Legos and he played in the sand nearby me, and you know, and it wasn't like I came back 100%, because you know, there's a lot of weight that people are carrying emotionally right now, but it helped, you know, 80%, and that's huge right now.
Yeah, 80% is better than most people. we'll be having. I mean, you know, certainly in today's world with, you know, quarantine life and homeschooling and all of these things, I'm also curious to hear what some of your favorite tips are for parents to actually mm-hmm. use, you know, that they can apply right now.
Yeah, I'm happy to do it. And along with all those tips, like everything starts with the being kind to yourself, not judging yourself by what you see other families. Oh, everybody else is baking cakes and doing art projects and, you know, whatever, you know, we can sit all day and beat ourselves up for what we think is happening in somebody else's house, right? What we assume is going well because that's what they're posting about or speaking about. And, you know, we all know and we know cognitively that that's not, you know, the entire story, but still we take it on and judge ourselves for it. So even, not even, but also when it comes to parenting and the tips and the tools, it's all about first, you know, being kind to yourself and understanding, holy moly, you have probably dealt with the biggest parenting challenge ever in your life these past 3 months because everything changed and you didn't have time to prepare for it, you know, or plan ahead or, you know, and every kid is different and every relationship is different. And, you know, there's so many different variables that have, you know, that are incorporated in what just happened and what is still happening with everybody. So I think that there's a lot of space for us to sit back first and say, wow, you know what? Like, you're doing a dang good job. Period. Like, it's, you're doing a great job. So let's start from there. And if there's areas that you want to improve, then, you know, then here are some tools for that. You know, one of the things we started doing, so we had some homeschooling experience prior to this, which was very, very lucky and put me in a unique position to really be able to focus, you know, use those skills personally and in my family so that then I really delved into to work and building my business during this time, both because the needs were so great and it happened to be in an area that I had recent experience with.
Yeah, and didn't you have a 1-year road trip that you did?
Kind of, yes. So we you know, we were living in Los Angeles a few years ago, and I found myself doing a lot of driving in traffic to get everybody to school and not enough time in the evenings for even just the quote unquote essentials, you know, for homework and playing outside and, you know, eating dinner and taking showers or baths, let alone like a soccer practice or a music, you know, anything else. So it was very, sorry, one of my kids just scootered by. It was very daunting and overwhelming. And so somebody said, you know, you have three kids. We ended up with three kids in private school. And they said to me, hold on. Hey, Ethan. Live radio, everybody. They said, you know what you could do with that tuition money? You know, you could travel. And I thought, oh, my gosh, you could. So we pulled everybody out of school. We did about 6 months of homeschooling in Los Angeles, which for me was not how most people imagine homeschooling. You know, I didn't teach them directly anything. I just facilitated, you know, classes in the community and group classes and then, you know, a tutor for math and somebody that came to the house and did language arts. And it was really incredible. And we had a really wonderful experience, and my kids play instruments. And so through a unique combination of factors, one of them ended up being asked to audition for a Broadway musical that was starting a touring company for the show called School of Rock, based on the old Jack Black movie called School of Rock.
Yeah.
And so they wanted, you know, child musicians that then they could also just teach to act and sing, you know, that had, you know, potential in those areas, but they wanted, like, first and foremost, like, musician kids. And so So, you know, my husband and I looked at each other. We thought, well, this is probably, you know, probably won't ever happen. But if it does, we knew for ourselves and our family, and this is about knowing yourself and being honest with yourself, that this was something that we would either figure out financially and logistically how to do it all together, that we would either all go or we would pass. And, and my husband had been in the entertainment industry, and so we had traveled before a lot to go on movie locations with him. And we knew how hard it is on a relationship and a family to have parents, you know, working months at a time or weeks at a time apart. It's a lot of pressure for a family. So we knew that we, you know, didn't want to put ourselves in that kind of situation. So anyway, we figured out how to do it, and we all went on the road, all six of us, and joined this traveling musical. And there were, you know, these kids had 8 shows a week, and on Mondays was travel day, and you'd, you know, pack up. And because of, you know, most people, we were the only ones that traveled with the whole family. Most people were one guardian and one child, and then a bunch of adult actors and musicians and everybody as well. Cat, you know, the crew and everybody. And so they would all stay in a hotel and go on the flights. And but often the hotel wouldn't have, you know, wouldn't have laundry or wouldn't have, you know, a kitchen. And so I would book separately. You know, I would cash out that, and then they called it a buyout. You could buy out and then use that money towards, you know, an Airbnb or, you know, a hotel that has a little kitchen in it or something. And so every single week I'm booking, you know, four or five cities ahead, a hotel, rental cars, and, you know, what else? Oh, and flights, because sometimes, you know, the flights would be different. And so it was crazy. And this, and I wrote the book, Stretch Marks, while we were on the road. So I would, you know, edit in hotel lobbies or in coffee shops during the week. And then I would print out a copy at, like, you know, I would, you know, ask the front desk to print me out a copy. And then I would get on the plane and I would redline it. And then the next city, I would do another iteration and write some more and then edit it. And so it was an experience like I never in my life would have anticipated being in.
Well, it's really interesting. Lots and lots of valuable experiences with raising kids in different situations, homeschooling or not homeschooling, etc. So again, if there are listeners who have questions for Amber, the number to call, if you have your pen handy there, is 1-888-627-6008. So just tell me a little bit about Stretch Marks. What's the core message that you're sharing in Stretch Marks?
I'm sorry, I lost you there for a quick second. Say that one more time.
What's the core message that you're sharing in Stretch Marks? It's a great title.
Oh, thank you. Well, the core, I mean, the Stretch Marks, the title itself, I think, would be a good core message, is that, you know, we all go through traumatic or challenging experiences, but we grow from them. You know, we expand, we learn, and had we not ever experienced those challenges, it really is hard to learn and understand better, you know, what we want and what's important to us. And so I love the term stretch marks because it kind of exemplifies that and also, you know, encourages people to wear those stretch marks, whether they're psychological or physical or emotional, as badges of honor. I mean, we can really be proud of them because we learn from these experiences and we grow, and we also are often like more interesting people as a result, because, you know, everybody gets irritated when you see that seemingly perfect person that's never had a challenge in their life. Nobody wants to hang out with them. You know, they want to hang out with people who, right? I mean, all the people that you interview have all gone through just incredibly challenging experiences, and that's what makes it so fascinating and so inspiring and mm-hmm. so interesting. I mean, it really makes us whole, real people. And I think that the quicker, you know, I call it in my book, there's a whole chapter called Kintsugi Yourself, and that's the Japanese art form where they take vases and pottery that have cracks in them or have broken apart, and they put them back together with glue that's been mixed with powdered gold. And so it highlights, and I'm sure you've seen pictures, so it highlights all of the quote-unquote, you know, breaks and faults and weaknesses in the pottery. But in this, you know, in this world of kintsugi art, you know, these vases and this pottery is considered far more valuable and far more beautiful as a result of those weaknesses, and showcasing those weaknesses, really, you know, putting them on display. And I think that we can do the same thing psychologically. And this doesn't mean like wallowing in our weaknesses or, right, you know, talking about them incessantly, but it means acknowledging, putting them out there, because we all have them in different ways, and it makes us more authentic and relatable to others, I think, in our life. And it also increases, you know, our capacity for compassion as well. And so I think, you know, if we can get to a place, and it's a process, you know, where we, you know, a lot of us were raised in homes where, you know, you needed to look a certain way, you needed to act a certain way, you needed to, you know, you needed to not talk about the problems that were going on at home, you know, that was a big deal in a lot of households. So it's not an easy mindset to shift for a lot of us. But I think that if we acknowledge that, wow, yeah, that would make my life a lot less stressful, and I could connect more easily and more authentically with other people if I say, hey, you know what, like, I struggled with an eating disorder for 15 years of my life, and it was really hard, and it's still really hard. Or, you know, and you put it out there and you own it, and then you move on, and it takes that weight away from, you know, that burden that's always on you. You're just carrying it around, and you're spending, you know, we don't have a lot of extra energy and time and emotional space right now, right? So the less you're carrying, you know, with you constantly, like the more you can lighten your load, then you can take on other things far more easily.
So yeah, I remember talking on a similar topic at the Fearless Women's Conference. So it was like about 500 women there, and talking a little bit about my journey with my dad, and you know, growing up in a household where he was basically ruling the household with an iron fist, because he was PTSD, came back from the war, got a bullet in Dunkirk that grazed him, and it changed him. And I know I was a kid who was an adventurous little kid and got spanked all the time. And I mean, I remember talking about how, you know, he had been so mean, and this is probably a story for another day, but I put up a shield, and I carried that shield around for about 45 years before I realized that, you know, the shield was protecting me, but it was also keeping other people out. And it was creating a barrier. And that was also around the same time that I burned out. And I was burning out because I was working with, you know, in coaching, but working with oil and gas firms in downtown Calgary and a lot of male leaders. And it just wasn't nourishing my soul. So, you know, I mean, I talk about the burnout with an open heart, because I know that, you know, I took 3 months off, and that was when I started, you know, really pulling the pieces together of what do I really want my life to look like. And, it, you know, when you know what you don't want, it makes it so much easier to figure out the opposite, which is what you do want. And show up authentically in it. So, yeah, it's so interesting. And I listened to you talking about your kids, and I think, well, you know, my kid is 25. However, he's, you know, he's special needs, and he's a social age of probably about 6-7. And so he's never really going to grow up, per se.
Right.
So it's, you know, it's one thing to have a handful of kids that are all doing all of these extracurricular, really interesting things, and managing that part. It's an, you know, completely separate scenario to be managing, you know, a kid who's having a seizure in a restaurant who looks like, you know, he's about, you know, 18, and yet can't necessarily articulate it. And yeah, anyway.
Yeah, and everybody has, like, I think of one of my girlfriends, she has two toddlers that if you saw them walking through, you know, the park, you'd think, oh, they're, you know, sweet, healthy, cute, happy family. Everybody's happy. And they both carry a very, very rare genetic mutation that makes them 40%, or maybe it's more than that, a huge percentage more likely to get a slew of different types of cancers. And the little one has already had one and already fought through it and is in remission. But that is on that family's mind 24/7. Every 3 months, they have to do MRIs and preventative things. So, you know, it just makes you realize compassionately, like, you have no idea when you see people. Yeah, you see a 25-year-old, you know, or you see somebody having a fit and you think, well, why is that person having a fit? They're not controlling their kids. You have no idea. You have no idea.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
they've been through or what the issues are at all. So, and I like that, you know, when we do share our difficulties and our challenges with those around us, and, you know, especially in a safe, supportive environment, then it allows us to have compassion in a way that this planet needs so much of right now, especially in fear, right? When people are scared, then, you know, we close in, we hunker down, you know, we get really protective. And which is there for a reason, but then the compassion side is more challenging, and I think we need that more than ever. But, and I love what you said. I want to circle back, because when you said that you, because of your relationship with your father, you had built up this very protective shield, and when you noticed the kind of the negative side of the shield, the other side of the coin, you know, that was the first step in, you know, in shifting that. But so much of it, like shifting it, I think is like what you said, acknowledging how it had benefited you to that point, or maybe not all the way to that point, but for, you know, was created for a really real important reason that you needed. So lots of times we need to take that first step to say, wow, I so appreciate that I was able to create this really strong shield because it allowed me to do X, Y, and Z. It allowed me to feel X, Y, and Z. You know, if we take a moment, instead of just saying, like, why am I like this? I, you know, I push everybody away and I'm not close to anybody and I, you know, whatever, I'm making assumptions, but, you know, whatever it is. And instead of beating ourselves up for that, if we take a moment first to really, really feel grateful for all the ways that served us, it's so much easier to let go of it, I think. And we often don't do that. I think of women and like how we speak about ourselves and think about ourselves physically, because we get very critical. And, you know, we focus on the one or two things on ourselves physically, for instance, that we don't like, or that isn't working, you know, that doesn't function
right.
well. Instead
yeah.
of spending, you know, maybe a little bit more time focusing on all the things that are working in your body, or all the things that you do like about your body or your health, or your, you know, well, huh, my hips hurt and all I think about is that my hip is hurting. Okay, well, how do your lungs feel? Is your breathing okay? Like, can you hear well? Like, you know, there's so many other things that are working well, and there's obviously, like, there's a reason chemically in the brain that's really, really helpful to focus as much as you can on what is working. And then, well, I mean, that goes into a whole nother, area, but, and, you know, and bringing it back to parents, I think that is really important when you're parenting and you're surrounded by people all the time and you have no break right now, right? And a lot of people don't have an outlet, is really taking that time to, A, in the morning, you know, find a morning ritual that works for you, allows you to enter your day more calmly and more focused. But also at the end of the day, circling back to gratitude and maybe going around and in front of everybody, we do what we call like circle compliments, where everybody compliments something that they admire about the person on their left. And it's really beautiful because it, you know, it allows you to get into that space where you're actually thinking of things that you appreciate about the people that you're with. But it also yeah. hearing, you know, for siblings in particular, hearing a compliment from your sibling is like gold, you know?
Yeah. Well, it's so important because, I mean, when you were talking earlier about about the shield, you know, it definitely did help me to deflect negative comments, stares, you know, people that didn't understand when Alex was growing up. I mean, they told me that he would never, ever walk at one point. And I was like, no, not happening with my kid. He's going to walk. It'll just take him a little bit longer. And so he was about two and a half, somewhere in there, when he finally started walking. So, you know, when I see little kids toddling around and they're like, you know, 10 months old, it's just, to me, it's just so adorable and so cute because I never got to experience that. You know, when I was putting the Words, Women, and Wisdom book together, I went out and I interviewed confident and influential women to include their nuggets as well as my own learnings working with my clients for the book, you know, Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations. And Marcy Shymoff was one of the ones that I interviewed, and she said, you know, certainly when it comes to accepting compliments, I mean, that's one of the key things in her book, Happy for No Reason, is to be able to accept those compliments gratefully and not just sort of shrug them off. Oh, this old thing, you know, I just threw it together. You know, when someone's complimenting you about something you're wearing, for example, is learning how to accept the compliment. So as you said, it's you know, it's really, really important to be kind to yourself and learn how to do that. So excellent. Well, we've got some interesting things. I think you've got some interesting things on your agenda for the remainder of 2020. So tell me what you're up to now and how could either I or my audience support you.
Yeah, well, one of the things I recently put together, and it was very much because I feel like, you know, this situation that everybody's been in, you know, the global health crisis and economic fears and worries and overwhelm, along with just all of the transitions with families and home and being in quarantine, and there being a big uncertainty about how long this will continue and what it will look like in 2 months or 4 months and 6 months, and the unknown can be very unsettling for people. And so for me, I thought, gosh, I really want to serve my community with something to refuel a little bit and recharge, because, you know, it's really hard to keep giving, and whether that's to work or to your partner or to your children or to yourself, if you're empty, you know, if you just have nothing left to give, you know, you can't do it anymore. So, and for me, one of the things that I love going to is books, is other, you know, women, amazing women that have written books. And so I put together a book set that kind of covers everything. It covers, you know, physical health and wellness. It covers sleep issues with your children, because if you're not sleeping, either yourself or your children, man, it's really hard to fix anything. Your patience level suffers, your immune system suffers, your, you know, everything has become so much more difficult. So sleep to me is key. And then my book is in there. And then there's a book on how to use your intuition. And so I love this book. And then Emily Fletcher's book on stress less, accomplish more, is about, all about her meditation techniques that are beautiful and very simple and easy to use. And so I put together these five books, and then I have a journal that goes with it called the Be Truly You Journal. And so I created on my website, you can access it, which is this ambertrueblood.com, but it's called the Summer of Simplicity book set. And I wanted to create this really beautiful book set that people can, that kind of covers a bunch of different areas that I think we could all benefit from refueling. And then a little, you know, I think the first like 50 orders will have a little extra, you know, bonus gift with it, because who doesn't like a little extra, you know, bonus gift. And so, and they're all these women-led companies that contributed to the little VIP bonus gift, and the books are beautiful. And so that's the most recent thing I have done, is put together this to really also just alert people, even if books aren't for you, even if you know, okay, I'm not really going to read this, like knowing that it's not really a luxury at this point to refuel yourself emotionally and psychologically. It's really kind of your responsibility. If you want to be able to continue functioning on the planet, you have to make sure that you're doing things for yourself that can replenish all of that emotional and mental energy that you're expending, because right now we're expending a lot more than we ever have in the past.
Well, change is all around us. I mean, we can either do something about it, or it's like a tide that'll just wash over you and wash you out to sea. So put a stake in the sand and pick up a copy of this book set and really give yourself the energetic boost that you need with valuable information, insights from well-known authors who have a lot to share. So that's great. So that's on your website, ambertrueblood.com. And what's it called? Yes. The Summer something?
The Summer of Simplicity.
Okay. Summer of Simplicity. Love it.
Because like you talked about opposites, like what is the opposite of, like what would we like? I mean, simplicity to me is like, can you imagine things being simple?
Exactly. As opposed to chaotic.
Yeah, chaotic, and you know, there's a lot of fear and anger and anxiety and confusion happening right now. So I think some clarity, and you know, I think the people that have had some emotional success during this period are really those that have pulled back to basics. Okay, what is most important to me right now? One of my consistent affirmations for the past couple years has been, you know, I'm so grateful that everyone I love is safe, happy, and healthy and together. Right. Because at the end of the day, I thought, okay, those are my most important things, you know? And so every time I'm in the shower, I'll say, oh, I'm so grateful that everybody I love is safe, happy, healthy, and together. And that's, you know, that helps me not only, I think, draw that situation to me, but I think that it helps me remember when I get upset about something like, oh my gosh, these floors are so filthy again. How can they be filthy? I just cleaned them the other day. You know, and you can get so upset, or like, are you kidding me? That laundry's been, nobody else can put away the laundry, you know, whatever it is that is your trigger. And that's one of my tips. In my book, I have a lot of like little simple tips, because that's what I would want as a mom. That's what I want now, is, you know, give me stuff I can use right now to help me lose my mind. Yeah. And one of them that I talk about recently, especially, is triggers. Like, know your triggers, because most of the time they're triggers for you. They're not triggers for anybody else. That's just not bothering anybody else. You know, whatever it was, like leaving the coffee in the coffee maker overnight and not cleaning it out, whatever it is that you know drives you nuts. So when it's a trigger, this is something that you don't want to delegate, because if somebody doesn't do it correctly, or they don't do it in the time frame you want it to be done in, it's just going to add to your frustration level and resentment, and it's not going to be done, so it's still going to be triggering you. So I say don't delegate your triggers. And so, for instance, one of them for me is, you know, a lot of all the clean laundry gets dumped on the couch. So I know for me, seeing that there for hours and hours or days and days is going to drive me nuts. So I either ask somebody, okay, just leave it in the laundry basket until I'm ready to deal with it, or I tackle it first thing in the morning and bring the kids in, like, okay, everybody get your piles, here, you take this, da, 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 and we get it done. Or I'll hide it. I'll like throw a blanket over it so I don't have to look at it until I can deal with it. So, you know, it doesn't mean I stop everything and do it right then always, because you can't. But if you take responsibility for your own triggers, I think that will not only allow your patience and calm to be renewed, but it will help the way you're treating anybody else that you're quarantined with.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that, you know, when I was talking about my book, one of the things I referenced, well, there's about 175 references in there, but one of them is Sheryl Sandberg's reference talking about, you know, getting in other people involved with household chores and housework, and how I can't remember the exact percentage now, but how it just makes such a difference, especially if your spouse is involved in taking on some of the household chores. So, you know, one of the things that came through as I was researching the book is, you know, women, we don't generally speak up enough to ask for what we want, then we don't negotiate effectively, and then we wonder why we get the short end of the stick. So for those listening, if you're intrigued about Words, Women, and Wisdom, The Modern Art of Confident Conversations, you can actually go to my website and pick up a 3-chapter free ebook. So it's not the whole book, but it'll get you a taste of what's in it for 3 chapters, and that's at Words, Women, and wisdom.com. and it's spelled out A-N-D versus an ampersand. So wordswomenandwisdom.com, and there's a red button on the front page. You can click on that. It's really important that as women, we do take a stand for our own happiness, because as Amber has shared as well, when we are the role models for the family, our kids are noticing, even when we don't think that they're looking, they are looking. And that was one of the reasons, again, for writing my book, was watching my mom literally have the dignity drained out of her by my dad and swearing that I was never, ever going to be that woman. And then I sort of flipped into being in the other mode of putting a shield up. And people didn't get close. They didn't get an opportunity to get close, because I wasn't going to get, you know, I wasn't going to get hurt again after being hurt so bad with my dad. So it's so interesting how all of our life's experiences come together. So very often the women I have on my show are those that also have a social enterprise element to their business or some sort of a socially inspired mission. And I know with the work that you're doing, I mean, you're touching so many lives already. Is there something particular that you have as a passion project or a social enterprise piece as well?
Well, I mean, I would say yes. It's not in action yet. But I'm really passionate about the educational system, specifically right. here in the U.S., because that's what I'm most familiar with. And the many, 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 many ways I believe it can be improved. For me, the first step to that is to I would love for the next generation and future generations to, you know, be able to lead with compassion and creativity and kindness and problem-solving skills and amazing communication skills. And I just think that we're not set up for that right now. And so part of the reason why I'm so passionate about helping parents and mothers is I think it starts there. I think if we can help mothers to really get very clear for themselves what is most important to them, what values they hold most dear in their family, what their priorities are, then they feel good about themselves and their own choices, and then they can be more stable and confident and clear in how they parent, which will then, you know, filter down, I think, beautifully. So to me, that's why I start my work there. But my next step is really to, you know, bring together thought leaders in the educational world and look at how we can, you know, improve our educational system that was designed so many years ago for a very different world.
Well, if you haven't yet connected with Natalie Ledwell with Mind Movies, Natalie was one of my guests a little while ago. She's also, I think, a guest. She's also on Podopolo with her new podcast. But as I say, if you haven't connected with her, she's doing some incredible work in schools as well with her.
I have. And I love her. I love her.
Awesome.
I love her model. It's beautiful. It's so important. And I love, too, that she, you know, how she tackled it. You know, she saw a problem that she was passionate about, and she didn't have kids, and she didn't have kids in the educational system, and she got involved and did something about it anyway. It's beautiful.
Yeah. Well, that's what we women do. We get involved and we do something about an issue. So thank you for joining me today, Amber. It's been very informative, a great pleasure. Stay connected with Amber at ambertrueblood.com. Stay connected with me at wordswomenandwisdom.com. And I hope that this has provided you with a little bit of ideas and respite from a busy day. So have a beautiful day. Thank you, Amber, and have a great afternoon.
Thank you. Thank you, Yvonne. You too. Have a lovely day.
Bye for now.